You're listening to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast, brought to you by Ministry Grid. Ministry Grid is an online church leadership and volunteer training platform offering a library of thousands of videos and a suite of powerful admin tools to provide practical training for every area of ministry in your church. Find out more and get a free 30-day trial at ministrygrid.com/howitworks. Welcome to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast. I'm your host, Barnabas Piper. I'm here with Todd Adkins.
Wood.
And with Brad Lominick. Big round of applause for Brad.
Yes.
That is Brad clapping for himself.
Yeah, I like to clap for myself.
He's really excited about himself. Before we get to what you have to say,
Yes, I am a guest.
Brad is excited because he recently released his second book.
That is true.
And
about 10 days ago.
About 10 days ago from this recording, which means who knows from when we actually release this, but it will still be new and exciting and awesome.
Yeah.
And tell us title, tell people where they can get it, all the pertinent information,
H3
Brad.
Leadership. And the subtitle is Be Humble, Stay Hungry, Always Hustle. Those triple H's being Humble, Hungry, Hustle.
That would be the H3.
Yes. And you can get it wherever books are sold, which I'm assuming Lifeway would be one of those places you could get
I know that you can get it online because I linked to it once.
You sure
did. At Lifeway.com.
Lifeway.com.
Tell your friend, tell your dad, tell your mom.
Go to the local store in your local area. Or you can go to Amazon or any of the other outlets.
That's right.
That are available. And but I would like for you to go to Lifeway since you're listening to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast.
If you go on Twitter and search the hashtag, what is it, H3 Leadership?
Yes.
Yeah.
You can see Todd has tweeted through the book and dropped, I don't know, 40 awesome quotes.
He did.
And so you can go get a sense of what it is. And it's a fantastic book. And that's not me just pumping Brad up.
Absolutely. Well, I want to get into the topic today, which is how to lead staff that you don't like. Has that ever happened?
It makes me nervous that Todd is starting with
Are you referring to a certain person?
There's no one in particular that I am referring to on my team.
This is a big. This is a big matzo ball we're kind of throwing out there.
I know. This is a risk.
So to get us started, how important is it to have a team that you like? 1, 2, 3, go.
I think it's really important. To create team chemistry and culture and affect just to have an environment that you feel like you're excited to be a part of on a regular basis. I believe that you want to work around people that you enjoy being around. People say all the time, you shouldn't, as a leader, especially, you can't be friends with people on your team. Like, that's bogus. That makes no sense to me that I can't, people I spend the most time with that I'm not actually friends with.
Yeah.
There probably
has to be, different hats that you wear or like circumstantial differences where you get into a certain decision-making concept and the buck still stops with you.
Sure.
So you are still your friends, but yeah. I mean, if I'm in a room with Todd, he is my friend. But if Todd says go, I go because Todd is
the
leader.
And I think it's easier to lead people that
who
you're
like
close
you.
To and that you enjoy being around and that you like, and they like you and you like them. And so I always would live by the principle of any team I've ever led, and when I'm hiring people, one of the questions I want to ask when I'm making that decision is, do I want to spend time around this person?
Yep. I'm reading a book right now called Primal Leadership at the recommendation of Daniel M. He mentioned it on this podcast a few episodes ago, and I'm only, 10% of the way through the book, and they make the point right off the bat that enjoyment and happiness and emotional tone in the workplace really determine productivity as much as anything else. So it's not just a fluffy thing that gets sort of blown up on websites. It's a real thing that people will work better if they are happier. People are happiest when they're working with people that they like, including the boss. So that's a really significant thing.
I think it's important to distinguish between like and love really quickly, because while you should love everyone on your team, it's okay if you like some people more, I think.
But it's not okay if you dislike any of them.
It's not okay to dislike any of them, because that's just not respectful. I will say this. There are some... So what do you do if you inherit a team?
It's a good question.
You better be a really likable person.
Well, if you're a leader, you got to lead through that. I mean, it's not their problem. It's your problem. There's probably something about them I mean, I've led people that I've had different issues with. I'm just going to be completely transparent and tell you how crazily
about their problems.
Immature I am. No, because ultimately it's your problem. So it may be that they're too obsessed with a hobby and they talk about the same thing incessantly. I'm sure people that work for me feel that way about some of the things that I talk about incessantly. But
AR-15s. Shooting guns.
Well, I don't know what you're talking about. Maybe they're too negative or they're too aggressive, or it could be something superficial, like you just can't stand the way that they pronounce some words if they talk with their tongue or whatever it is, that some mannerism.
You're not a big fan of speech impediments?
No, I'm just saying, like, if somebody, I really notice for whatever reason, if somebody talks with their tongue a lot, like it's very visible. Sorry. It's just one of those things that just bothers me. I'm like, I can't look at you right now because it's just,
well, that's
just
that's more weird. Of you're annoyed by somebody.
Exactly. But I'm saying there's, it's ultimately your problem, whether it's something superficial like that, or it really is something that they talk about, or you think they're too aggressive. There's ways to deal with that without, you know,
I think
letting it affect your opinion of them.
Yeah. I think there's also a difference between liking somebody socially and liking to work with somebody. Mm-hmm. Because depending on the nature of your job, you can have a fantastic working relationship where you show up at the office, you work with this person on a similar task, but you do not have any similar interests outside the office and you don't hang out on the weekends and things like that. So we're talking about like in the work context.
I'm not talking about somebody who's toxic to your culture or
people they're creating a bad environment.
Yeah. Those people should be removed from your organization. I'm talking about people that, you know, it's obvious they're making a good contribution to the team or you wouldn't have them around. But when push comes to shove, if you're going to function at a high level, you have to find a way to.
And one of the ways that, or one of the things, I think that's an important point, because a lot of people would say, well, can I get rid of someone? And, you know, the question you should be asking with that is there an incompetence issue?
Yeah.
You know, are they toxic to the team?
Yeah.
Regardless of whether you like them or not.
There has to be a detrimental issue.
We're assuming here with this conversation that they're adding value to the team.
Actually, I think most leaders have a much more difficult time leading people that they like than they don't like. Because when you like someone and their performance review comes up, you don't want to hurt their feelings.
Right. So then you sugarcoat it.
Or they screw up and you're like, oh, no, that's okay. It's really not okay.
Yeah.
You're incompetent.
Yeah.
And whereas if you don't have a strong like relationship, you can just have that objective standard of performance as opposed to friendship, which can cloud the issue.
And the fact that they annoy you makes it even, you're going to be more likely to give them a bad review.
Yeah. Hopefully you don't find any perverse pleasure in it.
Yeah.
Well, earlier, Todd, you brought up the idea of inheriting a team. So I think that transitions to our second question. So it's about the idea of creating a team. Is it possible to build a team full of people that you actually like? So if you're starting from the ground up, I think the answer is more likely to be yes. But if you've inherited a team and you're trying to kind of form it in the image that you want, can you build a team full of people that you like and how?
Sure. I mean, you can. I'm not sure if that's always the correct direction and strategy to take. I mean, if one of your greatest goals is to basically just have people around you who you like, that might be a little short-sighted in light of the vision, in light of the goal, in light of the mission of the organization, in light of where you're trying to get to. Because there's a difference between most people that I enjoy being around are very similar to my style. They have the same DNA. Yep. They're probably the same Myers-Briggs. They're the same DISC profile. Like, so the essence of a team is that you have lots of different people bringing different things to the table. So the people on my team that would annoy me the most over the years at Catalyst were the ones many times who were the most needed to
actually counterbalance
me and the way I'm wired. So is that an annoyance? Yes. But is it a huge factor of actually a successful team?
Well, and it's not a flaw. That's the other thing. It's one thing to be annoyed at somebody because there's friction. It's another thing because, like we were talking about earlier, there's a flaw in either competence or character.
Right.
That's not what you're talking about. Work styles creating friction is usually something that you need to look at and go, well, actually, we're both making the other person better.
Yeah.
I would be careful on the personality profiling thing. I think the number one thing that is most important is that they're passion passionate, their passion lines up with the vision and values, that the mission of the organization and the culture. Because, man, if their passion lines up with, if their conviction lines up with the organization, if they fit in well with the culture, then it's down to systems and processes, and you can align that pretty quickly and give people good tracks to run on.
Yeah. Good example, like at Catalyst over the years, we had a team environment and a culture that was work hard, play hard. And we tended to lean more into the play hard. And I would get annoyed by some people in our team, like Chad Johnson. I won't name any names, but Chad Johnson, who was on the team, Chad Johnson, who now works for John Maxwell's organization, and he's the chief of staff for their organization. And Chad and I are great friends, and we loved hanging out together outside of work.
Yeah.
So we were really good friends, and we loved spending time together. But in the work environment, he was so like dialed into sort of like fun, and I was more the task guy, like, hey, let's get it done. And so we clashed, and he would annoy me many times, and I would annoy him. But it was a huge part of the need for us to balance each other.
Because if the organization hadn't had both of you, it would have been probably unhealthy in one way or the other.
I would have never been balanced out. And so he was always the one fighting for cornhole, you know, or for a team outing. Or
that's worth fighting for. Well,
fighting for cornhole. And I enjoyed a good game of cornhole. But, you know,
for those of you from other parts of the country, that's also called bags. Or beanbag toss or any number of other games.
If you don't know what cornhole is, then
don't Google it.
but you need to sign up for cornhole because it's a fabulous game.
So other than cornhole, how can you build a team full of people that you like? And thinking specifically of the case you brought up where you inherit a team. So you had the pleasure of starting a team when you came to Lifeway, Todd. You got to hire people on over time and build a team that I think we generally like each other. I don't have any issues with people on the team. You don't seem to.
We've been meaning to have an intervention.
Yeah. I think it's time here on the podcast.
Okay, fine. I don't have any issues with anybody. I don't know how they feel about me. I'm not emotionally intelligent, apparently. But no, if you inherit a team, so you're hired into a leadership position and your team is there, and some of them are just not your cup of tea, either work style wise or personality wise or whatever it is. What do you do?
I got one trick that has almost always worked for me, and that is cornhole. Because I've been, it's not cornhole. No. Okay.
Money.
It's basically knocking out a big project together where you're in close quarters. It might be tense. It might be, you know, some kind of strategic initiative, or it just might be going and getting away with them for a day or some kind of trip, but something to where you're with that person, in close quarters. It sounds counterintuitive. It really does, because you're like, I already don't like this person and you're telling me to do something specific with them. Yes. Because when you knock out a big project together, shoulder to shoulder, it's really hard not to like that person. So it's kind of like, you know, praying for someone you don't like.
Right.
The more you do that, the more you end up finding common ground, the more you end up having endearment for that person.
It reminds me of a parenting trick that a friend of mine told me about. He was several years older than me, had daughters who were grown, but he said when they were little and they would fight, he would put whoever was fighting, the two of them on a, just sit them on the stairs side by side, and they just sat there until they could be friends again. And he's like, it could be a very, very long wait because they are stubborn girls. But it's kind of the same idea. You put yourself in a context where you have to work it out, and hopefully you work it out.
I mean, human nature, the very essence of human nature for so many of us is we think we don't like someone, and typically that might be based on
first impressions,
or a one conversation, and so. Like you were saying, Todd, like my advice, if you're in that place right now where you have people on your team and you go, yeah, there's some people I really just, I'm having a hard time liking, you push through that barrier. Because when you sit down and actually get to, if you ask people, hey, tell me your story.
Yeah.
You know, I want to get to know you. Most of the time when you start digging deep into someone's story, background, history, family, then you'll get to a point and go, you know what? I actually like you. Yeah. I feel like we could be friends now. And so many times we stop short as leaders of that point where we can say, hey, I like you, because we go, well, first impression is they're annoying me.
Well, I think most dislike is really shallow. Kind of the point you were just making.
Exactly.
I
mean, it's your problem as a leader.
If you come in as a leader and you're functioning in the paradigm of, oh, we just don't really like each other, you're childish.
Yeah.
That is, I have a fourth grade daughter. That's a fourth grade mentality. Oh, I just don't like that person very much. Well, what are you doing to solve the problem?
Exactly.
Are you trying to be friendly? Are you going out of your way to create a different context? Maybe that person has an awful personality. Most people fall short of awful personality. They might be annoying. You might just have misunderstood them, but that's a shallow, childish thing. If you just function in the, oh, I don't really like that person.
If you think about the impacts and the movements in the kingdom that have probably been thwarted simply because of a personality conflict, right, or somebody didn't like somebody, or
and churches split over stupid stuff like
goodness.
That.
Goodness. It's ridiculous. And you know, I think as leaders, the longer we go on, the more friendships and relationships and whatever we make, we need to go back and really examine early on. There may have been somebody that did something to us and they're in a different place now and we're in a different place now. And we still accuse them mm-hmm. in our minds of the things that they did back then and who they were back then. And I hope nobody listening to this knew me in college.
Exactly. That's exactly what I was just thinking of.
Because
not you. Be like, were you pretty much a jerk in college?
There's no pretty much to it.
You were a jerk.
I would like to publicly apologize to everybody I knew in college. I mean,
I wasn't that bad in college.
You were?
Yeah, no, I was pretty good. I was actually, I think I was better then than I am now.
No, I was. Tom and I have similar personalities, which means
we all are in agreement on this that you don't, as a leader, you should not have a goal of everybody's your best friend on your team.
During the course of life and ministry together, whatever it is you're trying to accomplish, I think this really leads into this question really well. How can a leader keep personal conflicts from becoming professional obstacles?
And we were just talking about how it's the leader's responsibility,
right,
to take ownership of those relationships and not just sort of let the pettiness define them. So that shallowness. So I think that's the starting place. It is the, you take responsibility and you say, I'm going to do everything in my power to make this a healthy, likable relationship.
This is a big issue in a lot of organizations.
It is.
I mean, the personal conflict that becomes a barrier professionally, because mm-hmm. there's a lot of people who work together who actually are friends outside of work, and their families get along and they're hanging out with each other and they live in the same neighborhood or go to the same church. And it's so hard to not bring that back in with you if there's something happening that's dysfunctional.
I live right across the street from one of the, from the AVP here at Lifeway. And so, you know, I see him all the time. Like all the time, and his family all the time. Right. I can't imagine how difficult it would be if we didn't have a good relationship. I mean, that's
to come back into the office. Yeah. Yeah.
Or I can think back into, you know, church life when, you know, somebody comes over to your house and for dinner or whatever, and they take home the marble rye.
That's a good Seinfeld episode. The marble rye
episode. That's figurative there, but you know, it's like some little offense that is not forgotten. I can't believe that they took home that marble rock. I mean, you know, there are little personal issues that may cause friction.
Mm-hmm. And the same is true of the opposite of this. How can a leader keep professional conflicts from becoming personal obstacles?
Why don't you talk about that?
Well, I don't know if I have any good advice on it other than I know this actually works both ways and you carry everything. So part of the solution is one, I mean, the scripture verse that is so true, do not let the sun go down in your anger, has to come to bear in with these kind of things, which is if there are issues that you're dealing with or that are annoying or that you're having problems with somebody, like deal with it.
Yeah.
Solve it. You know, be the leader who is willing to confront and have the hard first line that says, hey, listen, we need to talk about this. Don't let it fester. Don't let it just sizzle fizzle out on the side.
I think something that leaders especially, but every employee should do is to keep we talked about, we did an episode on criticism and the difference between a character assassination and like an issue-based attack. Most professional disputes have to do with work-related issues. We disagree on strategy. We disagree on implementation, those kinds of things. That has to remain an issue-based thing. So you yell and scream and kick and holler in the boardroom about that issue, and that cannot have an effect on your view of the other person's character. Hmm. That person is not a worse person because they don't hold the same viewpoint as you. If you slip into that, you've sinned, you've made the mistake, not them. Because you're still just trying to sort out a problem to be solved at a professional level. That's not a personal thing. It's hard, but you have to separate those two.
Well, and I think that the vision or the sense of the future that says, if we push through this as employees, as teammates, as friends, if we push through this to the other side of this, we're going to be better for it. We're going to be stronger, and we're actually going to like be able to work more together. And in some ways, we'll find the thing that may have annoyed us before or been a real challenge to be something that actually brings us together. And this is true in relationships.
Yeah.
Like the hardest conversations you have end up being the mile markers of your relationship getting stronger.
They're propellants for the whole thing.
Yeah.
I mean, if anybody who played team sports, if you are a hardcore competitor, you get into fights on the field. Absolutely. I mean, not necessarily trying to injure the other person, but there's scuffles, there's throwing people around, there's throwing elbows, there's whatever it is, because that's part of trying to do the object of the game and the competition. But when you walk off the field and you get back to the locker room, by the time you're showered and dressed, you're best buds again with your teammates. I mean, I got in fist fights with my friends growing up about sports, and 25 minutes later, we were playing video games or whatever, because that's the separation between a character and object based.
Okay, I want to say one more thing before we move to our next questions, because we really need to. And that is the difference between, I think that one of the issues is when you look at the business world, there is more of a professionalism and an easier separation between work life and personal life.
Yes.
Yeah. On the ministry side, man, it can get really messy.
Well, because work is people. It is relationships.
It is. And so I would say one of the things that you need to do as a leader or as a staff or as an organization is really make sure that you understand what the boundaries there are, if you have them. And I think you should have some, but just establish what those are so that, you know, everybody understands. So wherever you are, I did want to make that caveat quickly before we move on, is that I think, especially in the church or nonprofit, but mostly church side of it, it can get really messy unless you have some clear boundaries.
Leaders have to be willing to push into those places that are messy and actually, again, create the uncomfortable moment that you can push through to get to the other side, which is probably going to be, you're both better off for it. The team's better off for it. Don't assume that that's the responsibility of the other person.
Yeah. Leadership development is not an event. It's a relationship.
Boom. And tweet that.
The relationship is going to be, we will. but that's going to be, you know, it is going to be messy. The messy moments are where you learn the most and what helps you become the leader that you should be. I'm going to move to our fourth question quickly. And that is mostly because I don't want to answer this one. How can a leader diminish conflicts within a team when one person stands out as unpleasant?
Oh gosh. Bom, bom, bom. Everybody's got one too. Most teams have one unpleasant person who is just Debbie Downer.
Barnabas, so where were you there?
Diminished. I was thinking of Debbie Downer.
remember Oscar on the Brady Bunch? You guys didn't grow up watching the Brady Bunch.
Yeah.
I didn't grow up with a TV.
Come on.
I'm serious.
You kidding me?
No.
Dr. Piper. Seriously? You deprived Barnabas of TV growing up?
At our home, I was allowed to watch TV elsewhere, but the Brady Bunch was not on the docket very often.
Would you have been able to watch the Brady Bunch if it was on TV?
Probably.
Yeah, it wasn't like bad. It wasn't like Three's Company.
It's a family show.
Oh, no.
You couldn't watch Three's Company.
No.
Yeah.
can watch. Anyway,
I really like how you guys have avoided the hard questions. Yeah, I was started trying to go. TV.
No, Oscar would always show up.
That's leadership, man.
When Oscar would show up, something bad would happen on the Brady Bunch. Like the spider would get in the bed with somebody, or the picture would fall off the wall, or the laundry, or the washing machine would, you know, overflow with suds. Like if Oscar was there, yeah, he was the kid news. He was basically bad news Oscar. I'll start with my.
So how do you deal with bad news Oscar?
Oscar. Yes. Here's what I would, one piece of advice is if you call it out in a way that is fun, or at least you're trying to like, mitigate in some ways.
I mean, I have fun calling people out. I'm not sure if that's what you mean though.
But let's take, you know, you have a person on your team, her name's Debbie and she's Debbie Downer and everything is unpleasant. She's mean. She gets stuff done, but nobody wants to be around her. Then I think part of your job as a leader is how do you obviously deal with that situation? Well, if you allow her to then see that as sort of a badge of honor and everybody can make fun of that in a light way, then a lot of that will end up going away over time. So instead of sort of tiptoeing around the issue.
So you're saying make fun of the person who everybody doesn't like.
I'm saying in an appropriate way, you allow what in many ways is unpleasant about her to become something that she then starts to lean into and realize on her own that she doesn't have to be that way because people have given her the permission to go, oh, okay, that's me. I'm sorry.
It's just part of personality. It's a self-awareness issue. And it's also if everybody already knows it and everybody is already, if it's already out there, then, you know, I think it's helpful to have a conversation with her and just to acknowledge that in front of the team.
Cause if you acknowledge it, then you can call it out when it happens.
Yeah.
Now if you make it public, you can call it out when it happens. If everybody's tiptoeing around it, then when she's unpleasant,
some of that has to do with the person's personality because there are one of the things. So I don't have a problem with working with most personality types, but people who are hypersensitive and can't take a joke.
Yeah.
I don't know what to do with them because I poke fun at everybody.
Right.
And I really like when people do the same in return. Like this is the nature of interaction. So when you get people who simply can't join in that.
Yeah.
That stumps me because then it's like, well, we tried to be lighthearted and you got hurt feelings that it actually doubled down on the problem that we started with.
I want to be really sure that when we talk about, you know, it's not making fun of the person. You do the last thing in the world you want to do is make them an inside joke though.
Right.
Don't make them an inside joke.
Amongst everybody else.
Yes.
As long as it's public, it's funny. It's intentionally public. Typically will actually diminish the issue.
Yeah. It's
does that make sense?
With them, not about them.
Oh no, absolutely. Yeah. It's with them. They have to be part of that. You're not talking about them without them there. You're bringing this up because the power of a group many times will allow that issue to go away.
I'll tell you one phrase that I would say, and some of my former staff would complete the sentence before I finished it was, just because it's funny doesn't mean you have to say it.
Yeah.
And so there were some situations where...
Surprised you haven't dropped that one on me.
I have dropped that one on you.
Oh, really?
You just didn't remember.
You just didn't remember it. Man, but, you know, bad. And that's because there's, like, our team, there's no holds barred.
Yeah.
Like, it's on all the time. You can call anybody out for anything.
Yeah.
And that's, I don't know how healthy that is. I'm not saying that's the way you should do everything. I'm just saying it is what it is. But when you have that environment, you also need to recognize that occasionally it can get, you know,
a lot of bounds.
Oh yeah. Because you're like, oh man, this is really good.
Right.
This one is a zinger. Everybody's going to laugh except for the person I'm making fun of.
Yeah.
Cause it may just be a little too much. So I want to be careful there that you don't, you know. Don't go a bridge too far.
So the banner over a lot of these comments has to do with, I mean, this comes up repeatedly in this podcast, is emotional intelligence by the person who, I mean, oftentimes people are unlikable because they're not emotionally intelligent, but amongst everybody else to know how are you making them feel with these jokes or by keeping your mouth shut, if you probably should. It's just that idea of trying to draw them in. I think that the earlier we were talking about how the leader holds the responsibility in their relationships with somebody they don't like. I think the leader also holds responsibility for the team's interactions with each other. So if you see five people on your team don't like the sixth, you probably address those five people and say, hey, I recognize that this person is causing friction.
Right.
I need you to step up and kind of go the extra mile to try to bridge that gap. You know, assuming that you have a mature team, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
To try to keep it a team context.
You have to be willing to kill clicks.
Yeah.
As a leader. And clicks and
inside jokes and gossip. Really
clicks are so divisive on a team.
Yeah.
And because clicks are secret, they're hidden, but everybody knows about them.
Yes.
They're public, but yet they're postured as something that is private, and clicks will drive such division among teams where then it's not just the people are unpleasant. They just won't work together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's hit our last question. And we've kind of danced around this. It's come up, but we haven't really answered it yet. So we're going to seal the deal. When is the right time to cut ties with an unlikable person?
Let's just deal with it right now, guys. Todd, Barnabas, what do you want to say something to Barnabas? I mean, I know it's awkward, but you know, it's always good to get this out in a public conversation.
We're only a few months into this podcast, but if I have to go, I understand.
Well, what's really funny is we're assuming that
Brad, just because something is funny doesn't mean you have to say it.
We're assuming though that again, this is a competent person. We're not talking competence.
We're talking team dynamics issues here. More than competence.
I think when it's to the point where it is causing such harm that the end product, whatever you create, if that's an experience or it's a resource or it's a service, it's a gathering, if that is being impacted in a major way by this person, then that's you got to.
Yeah,
it's one thing to have feelings hurt that then sort of they fizzle out before you sort of get to the finish line of the product or the resource or whatever you're creating.
And I will say that it's unfair to the person if it hasn't been addressed. So, yes.
Well, that's
you
true.
Should.
Yeah, that's a fact.
You should all along be like making sure that this person is getting good feedback.
Yeah.
They're aware that their behavior is toxic. Your culture and to your product.
How many times would you say is appropriate for a conversation? Three at least?
Three at least, and documented after the first one.
Yeah.
And I think
three strikes, you're out.
The point you just made, Todd, is really important because toxic is different than just unlikable. Because you're talking about wrongdoing. You're talking about somebody who has earned their way out the door after multiple chances, not just somebody who you kind of go, they don't really fit. Yeah. We're not really keen on working with them. Because that toxic is doing what you mentioned, Brad, which is breaking down the work environment. I will not go to a meeting with that person.
Right.
I don't even want to receive an email from that person.
I can't work
on
a project with them.
That's right.
Yeah.
We cannot accomplish the goals that we're supposed to do because they're just that awful. That's a whole different thing than they're annoying.
Now, I just want to throw a sidebar to this because a lot of times, at least I've found that a lot of people who are unlikable, who are jerks, actually get a lot done. So how do you balance out the person who's you just can't stand, but you look at them and go, wow, they really do get a lot of things done.
Say being aware of that and helping them become aware of that. So there's simple things that you can do. You know, if you go back several episodes, you'll find one on personality profiling and different things like that. It's important for a person to know how they handle conflict. It's important for you as a leader to know how this person and this personality is going to handle conflict. There are personality types that tend to be more detail-oriented and some that tend to be more people-oriented. And so the detail-oriented, task-oriented people that are aggressive can seem like they're
unlikable. Yeah.
And so it's really important.
But part of your job as a leader then is to help them be self-aware to go, hey, you may not even see this, but you know you're a jerk, right? Like you have jerk tendencies.
Yes.
Well, I also think in a context like what we work in, where there's a larger organization, moving them to a position where their strengths can be, you know, if they're a high producer and an awful coworker, put them in a position where they're working in a room by themselves, knocking things out.
Right.
Because they're still getting things. They're still doing something useful, and they're not harming other contexts. If you're in a position to do that, a lot of times you aren't.
Yeah.
Well, I think we should probably wrap up there before we think of more context of people we don't like and I get fired two more times and things like that. So,
you guys like me?
Yeah.
We're working on it. It's our responsibility to bridge that gap.
Yeah. Awkward.
Well, we appreciate the listener feedback that Brad gave us at the beginning, and we would also love to hear from any of you listeners. So hit us up on Twitter. That's at Barnabas Piper or at Todd Adkins. That's Adkins, not Atkins, that's not right. Like the diet.
And so, don't forget the D, then you'll be getting that senator that was not very nice Akins? From Missouri. Yeah, I get people all the time.
Not Todd Adkins, Todd Adkins.
Hey, you're a jerk. And I'm like,
I didn't know anything. Todd is likable, I promise. Yeah. If you want to hashtag the podcast, we've been using 5LQ. That way it just kind of allows all of the podcast tweets to be in one place. So hit us up. Let us know how you're feeling about it. Give us questions, suggestions, anything. We love to hear from you. Thanks so much for listening and tune in next time.
Thank you for listening to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast. To learn more about how you can train leaders in your church, visit ministrygrid.com/howitworks and watch a short demo video. For participating, you will get a free 30-day trial for your entire church. Again, that's ministrygrid.com/howitworks.